Let us talk a little bit about the Torah portions, which, as I've already mentioned, is a little bit of a digression. It's interesting in, for a number of reasons, of course, because there's lots of interesting detail here, but also because it seems like kind of a digression. So it starts in chapter 25 of the book of Shemot, or Exodus, and it says, and, well, it starts at least like the way a lot of them do, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe, saying, speak unto the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, so that they take for me, well, they raise up, they lift up, literally, terumah. That's the word there, to raise up or to lift. Sometimes you'll see it called a heave offering, or a contribution. That's what's being commanded here. Of every man whose heart makes him willing, you shall take my offering. And then he lists the kind of things we're going to have them take. Of them, gold, silver, brass, blue, purple, scarlet, fine linen, goat's hair, ram skins, dyed red, seal skins, acacia wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil, sweet incense, all kinds of stones, onyx and others for the ephod and for the breastplate. And then it says this, here's the culmination of the reason why all of these things are being lifted up to be given freely. Let them make, lay, me, li, a sanctuary. And literally the word there, of course, in the Hebrew, this is one of those words people need to probably learn in the Hebrew. It's mishkan. Actually, in this case, it's mikdash, sanctuary. The pattern is going to be for the tabernacle, the mishkan. So we got a couple of words. Mikdash, the sanctuary, and mishkan, tabernacle. And he says, I'm going to show you a pattern for the mishkan, and a pattern for all the things in it, the furniture, the furnishings. Here's how you are going to make it. It's like a blueprint. All right, this is a good place to pause for a second. Because, again, I'm gonna lay out questions here one more time. I'm going to do what I find interesting to do, at least. I hope you guys get something out of it anyway. And that is to ask a lot more questions than I can give answers. First of which, why now? Why do we get this digression, it would seem, now? And let's talk about that for a second. Then we'll also talk about some other aspects that may kind of help to answer that first question. It looks like we're going to get a lot of detail in this portion, and indeed we are. And I'm not going to go through all of it. I'll go through some major sections of the details anyway. But I want you to notice something as we do go through the details. He says, I'm going to show you. I will show you the pattern. As an engineer, I can tell you, you could describe for me a house all day long. But if you want me to build it, show me a blueprint. It's a heck of a lot easier. And you know what? We don't have any blueprints of the temple, of the mishkan, of the tabernacle, the sanctuary. And we don't have blueprints of any of these things. It would seem that Moshe did, and certainly those people who were anointed, literally, with the Ruach to make these things knew what they were doing. So I don't have any doubt at all that there was a tremendous amount of insight to the point where they didn't even need, they may have gotten another one of these brain dumps, if you will, like we see fixing, well, to get put into stone. We've already talked about it. What happened at Mount Sinai? So I guess the question is this. If we don't have the details, but we seem to have a lot of details, could we do this today? No, we really, I will suggest, although you'll see models, people have done their best to try to see what this thing might have looked like. We got models, but we don't really have a blueprint. I don't believe that an exact duplicate of the Mishkan could be built. Now, I know there's going to be people disagree with me. I won't argue with people that think maybe they've had a revelation. I've had some communications with some folks, and I'm not even at liberty because at least one of them hasn't been published yet. But there are folks that say, oh, you know, maybe the Mishkan is quite a bit different than what we've seen. Consider this or consider that. And you know what? They make a pretty good case and say, all right. You know, there's nothing in the description that is at variance with all kinds of other possible orientations and configurations for the Mishkan. Again, the point is, I don't know that we have enough detail, even with all the information that's given here, to really duplicate this thing. So back to this question of why now, and what about this is germane to where we are today as well. Well, one of them, of course, is that human nature being what it is, people make the same mistakes. I find it really, really fascinating that if we're talking about a world that is fixed and literally just going to dump it, and that we know, at least we pray, that what we will see in our lifetime will be a greater regathering, the greater exodus, the bookend to this one, where people are gathered together, as prophecy says over and over again, from all of the four corners of the earth, from every nation, tribe, tongue, and people, and brought back into the place that had we not been rebellious, arguably we wouldn't have ever had to leave. But all of that is certainly something to look forward to. Isn't it interesting that this digression takes place right in the middle of people having been given the Ten Commandments and a whole lot of mishpatim? And we know what's going to happen, don't we? What are they going to do? They're going to be whoring. They're going to be committing idolatry before Moshe even gets down off the mountain. We're evidently in that 40-day window in there. Does that sound like something that just could happen again? Does it sound like something that if you look at the world today, the kind of whoring that's going on all over the place, probably, yeah, I'll say it, probably makes the whoring that was going on around the golden calf look fairly tame by comparison. I can't prove that. But it certainly resonates with me, at least. And if you go out and you look and see what even among so-called, religiosity types, the whoring that they're doing, renaming the Pesach after a pagan goddess, just to, for starters, all the things that Ezekiel describes in chapter 8 and chapters 8 and 9 there. See the abominations. Look over here. Even worse abominations. All of those things, by the way, are going on now. 40 days of weeping for Tammuz, that's called Lent in the Roman pagan tradition. It's not a great leap at all for me to look at this digression in here and say, sure fits, doesn't it? A couple other possible answers, like Jeopardy, would present these possible answers to the question why and why now, why is this described out of sequence, in the form of a question. Except for the first one, maybe. We know that the Creator knew the end from the beginning. We've seen that in a number of indications. I have no doubt that He knew what was going to happen before any of this happened. It was all part of something that needed to happen. It's all been written down for us. But there does seem to be more to what's going on here than that, even. For example, verse 8 says, "Let them make for me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them." Got some notes in the margin. Throughout all their generations, there are some places where there are some references in here where sages like Rashi even point out that, hey, let's realize what's being talked about here. Does the Creator of the universe really need a tent, a mishkan to dwell in? No, arguably not. So some people will say what's really being talked about is that there needs to be a dwelling place, if you will, for my name's sake. Not that He won't occupy the area. And not that there aren't some very valuable lessons to be learned in the process of constructing it and in doing all of the things we're going to see described over the next few weeks. But that there's even still something bigger going on than that. I've already mentioned the idea of the greater exodus, the bookends, and I guess, let me just throw one other item into the mix. In the discussion that we're fixing to have, we're going to see some description of the Ark of the Covenant and the place where these tablets will reside. And isn't it funny that we're having a description of the mercy seat and the Ark of the Covenant, and yet, at the point where this is being inserted into the text, they ain't even got the tablets yet. Right? And they're gonna get broken anyway. How funny is all of that? It's almost, and I throw this in here as another possible exclamation with a question mark after it, Exclamation and exclamation. Is it just possible that the Creator is preempting a bit of paganism with all of this? So let's go through some of the details. And again, I won't go into incredible amounts of detail. I do think this is important to read through. Because somehow or other, I cannot shake the feeling. I've had it for years. Every time I read through this, I get the same understanding. We have numbers. We have descriptions. Sometimes I will read pieces, like the discussion about making the ark of a certain size. It gives the exact dimensions. It's going to be made out of acacia wood. It's going to be covered with gold inside and outside. Doesn't tell us, but it seems that it's a continual covering. In other words, that the inside and the outside are connected. Okay. Now, as an engineer, I would say if you put gold on the inside and gold on the outside and there was an insulator in between, it becomes a great big capacitor. Well, that describes a lot of things, but wait a minute, doesn't quite fit. Because if, in fact, you cover it with gold inside and outside, and the inside and the outside are connected around the edges and the lip, and the lid closes down on it, and it makes a nice seal, now what you have is not a capacitor, it is a Faraday shield. And if it's made out of gold, it's a really, really good Faraday shield. Anything inside that box is literally put in a place where the electromagnetic field, the E field in there, is pretty close to zero. So let's go through it. First thing it's described is that arc out of acacia wood. 2 cubits and a half by length, 1.5 cubits wide, and 1.5 cubits high. Overlaid with pure gold, and you put 4 rings on it. Basically, the idea is 2 and 2 on each side of it. These are for carrying it. Going to be carried with staves of acacia wood. They, too, are going to be overlaid with gold. The whole thing is great big conductive shield. The staves are in the rings. They shall not be taken out from it, says the text. And the sage Rashi says what that word and that phrasing there means is not ever. Not ever. Those poles are supposed to stay in those rings, period. And he says, put into that ark the testimony which I will give you. And you make an ark cover as well. Cut a couple cherubim. 2 cherubs in English, if you want to kind of pervert the Hebrew a little bit. Cherubim, of course, is plural. Out of gold, beaten work. Put one on each side, they face each other, they spread out their wings, and they screen the cover of the ark with their wings facing towards one another. By the way, the sages say that when the people were to carry it, just like the cherubim, they too would face one another. Kind of makes sense, can't prove it. Put inside this the testimony, he says again, that I'll give you, and there I will speak from you. I'll meet with you. Above the ark cover from between the 2 cherubim. And I will give commandments. Make a table, too, out of acacia wood. 2 cubits and 1 cubit and 1.5 cubits high. That, too, is going to be overlaid with pure gold. Put a border around it. This is going to be the table for the showbread. Make it 4 rings of gold, too. Put the rings in the 4 corners. And make staves. And you're going to make dishes and pans and jars and bowls out of pure gold. Set those upon the table of showbread. Then we talk about the menorah, a candlestick of pure gold. Now this is kind of interesting because I've been told, I can't comment on this really because I'm not a goldsmith, but I have been told by people that know more about working gold than I do that what is described here is no mean feat. Matter of fact, some folks have gone so far as to say, I don't think this could be done today. We don't have the skill or the ability to do this the way it's described. This thing is made out of a single piece of beaten work. Can you imagine taking a great big old piece of gold, smashing it down, fashioning it into a candlestick? Okay, that's fine. 7 candlesticks? Okay, getting a little tougher. How about shaft, cups, knops, flowers, all of one piece with it? Now you're talking even more difficult to have it all done so that you can beat the whole thing out and then put it into all of these forms. 3 cups on one side, 3 cups on the other side. All out of 1 beaten work of pure gold. You know what else? This is more gold than I've ever seen in a single piece. It's a heavy thing. It's pure gold. It needs to be so that you can work it. And yet, if you realize what pure gold is, it's pretty soft, too. The question is, does it take some kind of a extra natural force to have the arms, the outer arms in particular, of this menorah stand up if they're that heavy? Yeah, can't answer anything. Tongs, snuff dishes, all of this, vessels that go with it out of pure gold. See that you make them after the pattern, which is being shown in the mount. So this is something Moshe is going to see and come down and guide people to be able to do. Now we're going to talk about the tabernacle, the Mishkan itself, starting not like you might expect with, got to build a frame for it first. No, they're going to start with making the curtains first. From the outside in, kind of sort of. A fine twine linen, blue, purple, scarlet, with cherubim, the work of these skillful workmen, you'll make it. Gives a dimension of each curtain, 8 and 20 cubits. So 28 cubits by 4 cubits. All of these things are going to be the same. There are going to be a lot of them. They're going to be coupled together, 5 and 5. Now, what it doesn't tell you, and this is one of the things that people will point to, at least a couple people have pointed to that I'm aware of and said, huh, normally you think maybe we're going to couple these together short end to short end, right? So you got a long piece, but doesn't have to because it doesn't say. Maybe they get coupled together the other way. And if you think about it, that little detail that's missing there, whether these 28 by 4 cubit long pieces of fabric are joined together short ways or long ways, makes a big difference. Make loops of blue on the edge, 50 loops, 50 loops on each set, one opposite another. Make clasps of gold, so that the tabernacle, the Mishkan, can be one complete thing. Make curtains of goat's hair that's going to go over the top, 11 curtains. Couple them all up, get them ready to go. And it describes how there are going to be overhanging part that remains. The half curtain that remains shall hang over the back of the tabernacle. Make a covering for the tent. The word there is, I think it's ohel, isn't it? Yeah. Le ohel. Out of ram skins, dyed red, with a covering of seal skins above. There are some skins that are described in here, by the way, that just maybe we are not sure exactly what kind of animals these are. Gives the dimensions for those. Then we're going to make a bunch of boards out of acacia wood as well. 10 cubits and a cubit and a half wide, each board. And they're going to make all the boards of the tabernacle, 20 for the south side, with sockets of silver under the boards. Two sockets under one board for its two tenons. 40 sockets of silver in total. Make the borders around this entire thing. 8 boards, sockets of silver, 16 sockets. Lots of description of the boards and the sockets and how it goes together, but again, without a blueprint, I won't argue that the pictures that probably most of us have seen, we have no reason to know that they're not accurate. We just don't have any more reason to say that they absolutely positively would have to be either, because there are other alternatives. It's kind of fascinating to me that as much as we read this portion and think about it, we don't have the picture in our heads of what it actually looks like. And it could, in fact, be quite a bit different. You'll certainly hear various kinds of spiritualizations, too. What does this represent? Is this temple, this tabernacle, this Mishkan, are all of these things going to be something that's inside of us? Well, can't argue with any of that, too. I've seen some interesting discussions talk about this last year at least once, I think, from David Foreman and other folks. I don't think he claims that it's completely original, but it might have been, I forget now. That you can liken the description of the Mishkan, maybe to a face, maybe to people, certainly to the human heart, all kinds of really interesting possibilities for what it represents. Talks about making a veil hanging it upon the four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold and the hooks, how it's to be set up, where the table is to be set, where the ark and the cover is to be set. And then finally, chapter 27 says we're going to make an altar of burnt offering. It's going to be made out of acacia wood, 5 cubits long, 5 cubits broad, a great big square, 4 squares, height 3 cubits tall. It's going to have horns on the 4 corners. Each horn will be 1 piece overlaid with brass, and it'll have pots and things that are used to take away the ashes. And there'll be shovels and basins and flesh hooks and fire pans, all kinds of things that are associated with the altar itself, and a great kitchen. Put it under the ledge around the altar. Make staves of acacia wood. Overlay those two with brass. Staves are put into the rings, and this is going to be, again, carried, like other things that we've already talked about. Hollow with planks you make it, as it has been shown to you, it says. And then finally, we're going to make the court of the Mishkan, south side. There'll be hangings of fine twine linen, 100 cubits long on a side. 20 pillars, 20 sockets, the hooks, the fillets, in this case, again, of silver. Now, here's another one that I mentioned periodically. We got basically 3 metals that are going to be talked about here. And when you think about these things from an engineering standpoint, more questions than answers, but it's always been kind of fascinating. Kind of sort of from the inside out, working from the inside, we have pure gold on the very inside, and the things that are going to be in what's called the Holy of Holies. Moving outward from there, we have silver, and silver is going to make up the sockets, the things that are going to literally hold up the rest of this. And as we move out into the courtyard, we're going to have brass. So we've got gold and silver and brass. If you understand a little bit about chemistry and physics, by the way, brass or copper, well, brass is a mixture, but it's primarily copper. So you've got essentially 3 metals, maybe 4, that have some amazing properties, chemically, physically. Copper is the best conductor of all. Silver is the best reflector of all. Tremendous conductor of heat. All of them, especially gold, they're called precious metals. There are electromotive potential differences between them. In other words, if you put these things together, there literally is a slight potential difference that's across them. Silver has a fascinating characteristic that anybody who's been involved in health knows. Silver is arguably the best antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial that we know of. It has a tremendous property that's kind of fascinating. It tends to kill things that are harmful to people. For that reason, no doubt it's been associated with blood. It's a purifying agent. The ancients and the pioneers moving west across this country would take a silver dollar and plop it into something they didn't want to spoil, like milk, and it would help keep the milk fresh for a lot longer. All kinds of fascinating things here within the construction of this Mishkan and the furnishings and all of the things that are associated with it. We couldn't really do them anyway just because of the tremendous value of the things that would be in here nowadays. But were we to do so and were we to be able to build it right, I can't help but think that there's going to be a lot more properties of this Mishkan as a result of the way the Creator made these materials. Then we probably understand that. After the discussion of the court, it says, as we get towards the end of the portion of this week, all the pillars of the court are filleted with silver. Their hooks out of silver, their sockets out of brass. Again, metals and a slight potential difference across the places where these things fit together. The length of the court, again, 100 cubits, it's 50. And the height is 5 cubits, fine twine linen, sockets made out of brass. All of the instruments, it says, of the Mishkan and all the service thereof, all the pins thereof, all the pins of the court, shall be of brass. And at that point, literally, kind of in the middle of the description, the Torah portion ends. That's the end of Parsha Terumah. And next week, we'll talk about Tetzaveh with, again, more of the information about things that are going to be built. And at some point, a couple weeks down the line, we'll get back to the story of Moshe and some of the nasty stuff that that happen that leads everything else to fall into place. So much detail, and yet again, not remotely enough. I don't think we've answered the question of why it is that we're talking about why this is given now. And maybe we're not supposed to know. Maybe it'll become more clear as we begin to put the pieces together that we're still facing. And we see how the things that are panning out now pan out, and we start to get a look at the other book. If nothing else, I guess this is the way I'll wrap it up. I think it is really vital for us to understand as best we can, or at least to picture what is being described here. To go through these things, to read them, to see the story, and to see this digression right smack in the middle of one of these places where some really serious bad stuff is fixing to come down. And ask if that speaks to us in these times.